Mr. Taylor, Reel 3. Now, we're talking about your time at HMS Ganges at Shotley from February 39 through to May 1950. We've looked at sort of many aspects
May
of
May 1940,
sorry. Yeah. And we looked at sort of many of the things, the wireless training, the seamanship. Was there any other sorts of training you were doing, education and that? Was there anything else your training you were doing?
Well, you were talking about my swimming earlier on there. There was a Commander Havers, who I think had been a swimmer for the Navy. He used to run racing training classes.
Tell me about them.
I didn't go because my instructor said to me, you're here to learn to be a sparker, and too many side issues, it should take you off it. I sometimes regret it, and other times not. But those who went, it really improved their swimming. I had a friend who was in the other class, a signal class, Ron Stew, and he was a good swimmer. And I couldn't touch him after he'd done his racing training. He was so improved. It was amazing. I just couldn't sort of... we were basically, my prime stroke was breaststroke. I used to sort of mainly race in breaststroke. And I couldn't get near Ron after he did his racing training. It was amazing. And of course, it's... used to, soccer, deck hockey, as we used to play, what they called deck hockey. There was all sorts of sports going on.
Was sport important?
Oh, yes, very important. Yeah, very important, because it keeps you fit all the
So you were encouraged? Yeah. Well, not encouraged, you had to do sport.
Amongst the kit they issued, you had two pair of sports shorts, and you had two sports jerseys. One was white, one was blue, and they'd tell you which one to wear, depending which team you're on. That was the idea of it. One of the things you were doing, actually, in fact, in the basic training, which I missed, when you were saying about the drill and everything else, you had to sew your name in all your kit. And they used to have a wooden stamp, which you kept in your kit with your name on, K.E. Taylor. And that would be stamped in certain places on your kit. And then in red silk thread, you were taught how to sew this, and you had to sew your names in this. And because there was always a joke about Ron Stew only had a short name, and somebody else was McGilligan or something like that. But all your kit, and because you'd have, apart from the fact you were examined every day in your kit on your turnout, you had a kit master.
Now, how would you? I was going to move on eventually. Yeah. How would you prepare for a kit inspection? How much bull, as they used to call it, was there?
The first thing you do is you lay down your kit bag, and because it lays down flat, and the bottom is circular, and it's got a rope bottom for wear, and that goes down flat because your name's on the bottom there, and then. Per the seamanship manual, it's laid out in the seamanship manual how the kit has to be laid out, and you have to roll all your clothes are rolled up, and they have to be a certain size, could be about 9 inches, and they have to be rolled up, and you were taught the way to roll them up, so when you finished rolling them up, the name was shown, and you had what they call clothes stops, little pieces of cord, and you tied clothes stops around each side, and they were laid in a certain way down each side. And the boots, brushes and polish, toothbrush, toothpaste, everything was laid out in a certain way with your caps, because you had a cap box, because you had your best blue cap and your working blue cap, and you had a white cap as well in those days. And the kit was all laid out, and you got marked on this all the time. Now, the thing was... I got the medal for the best kit for my class, and I still got.
Now, why was your kit better? What was it about?
I suppose my general turnout all through the time I was there, and also the kit, because some people didn't roll them up tight enough, and they were a bit squashy and that sort of thing, and they hadn't got the name evenly in the centre and all that sort of thing. They had to be absolutely sort of perfect, and they might not have scrubbed the wood on their boot brushes, because you had to keep that all nice and clean, you see. And, little things all the time. And also your general turnout all the time. In actual fact, I think My mother thought more of that kit medal than if I'd won the Victoria Cross in the war, I think. She's so proud of that.
Now, so we're looking at the day, you know, generally. What would you do in the evening? I mean, you know, you get through, you have all these various sessions, and then what about the evening?
Well, in the dog, well, you had dog watch instructions. I mean, that went up till 6 o'clock, 8 o'clock. There was a certain amount of instructions after tea, usually. But then there was sport, see, the football matches being played, that sort of thing. You went to bed early. I mean, if I remember rightly, I wasn't too sure that I think you had to be in bed by 9 o'clock.
So, did you go to the canteen? Which was there a canteen?
Well, you didn't have much money, though. I mean, a boy's pay, I think, was 8 and 9 pence a week. And you were only given I think threepence a week of that. Threepence a week. Because the rest went into your account, and because in the Navy, as opposed to the Army and the Air Force, as I understand it, you bought your own kit after your initial issue. And so, you know, if your boots weren't repairing, they had to be repaired, so you had to pay for that. If you wanted a new jumper or something, you had to pay for that. So it came out. And the fact was, you could go on leave over to Harwich, they'd take across on the boat. I think if you'd saved up 1 and 6, something like that, a shilling or 1 and 6, you're allowed to go to Harwich. And if you'd saved up 2 and 6, this was on a Saturday, you could go on leave into Ipswich, which was further away because you had to go on the civvy bus there. But it's amazing, that money. I mean, it's going to Ipswich. I used to go there. I used to buy a writing pad and envelopes. We'd have a meal, go to the pictures, you know, buy some stamps, you know, and buy thus for all on our 2 and 6. I think it was 2 and 6.
I made
an allotment to my mother out of my money, you see. In those days, later on in the Navy, when I was a new entry chief, these youngsters, none of them sent money home to their parents. They got a lot more money than we did. But we were, you know, because our families weren't all that well off. And I remember I made an allotment out of 2 and 6 a week to my mother.
Would you often, I mean, would you rather go to Ipswich than Harwich, or was there a choice? I mean,
well, Ipswich was obviously a bigger place and that sort of thing, but it was just a case of getting out and going there. And of course, some of the boys used to get involved in smuggling cigarettes, which there was a very heavy punishment for, which we'll come on to later. Because I have strong views about the lack of discipline today and how the discipline worked there, and it did work. But although I started smoking a pipe when I was 14, there was no smoking allowed in boys' training ship. I used to smoke at weekends with mates or on a Sunday or something. You know, it wasn't heavy smoking or anything. I think it was just to be big and grown up more than anything else. Smoking didn't worry me, but some of the boys used to, you know, buy these cigarettes. Sort of, there's all sorts of bribery and corruption, and they'd go in the heads because the heads, a lot of heads around outside, as well as in the mess. And of course, you had Royal Marine Police there. They act as the police. And the term was, if you saw a Royal Marine policeman come along, it was lobs a jock. And everybody disappeared, because they could see the smoke rising, because there was no roofs on these toilets, you see. They could see the smoke rising and come along there.
And what would happen if they were caught? What was the punishment?
Punishment as a whole, if you did something wrong, which, yeah, some misdemeanor, nothing was very serious. You'd get jankers, as we called it. Could be 7 days number 11. Or
and what was 7 days number 11?
I can't remember the differentiation now, but it could be an hour's work a night or something like that when everybody else were. But you went into the punishment mess. You left your mess. It never interfered with your instruction, but you went into the punishment mess. You got out of bed about 4:30 in the morning, and you had to have a cold shower. You didn't get sweet with your dinner, which was, you know, terrible to the boys. But the funny thing was, everybody, because they were fit and young and everything else, they did this and they were tough. But the thing was, second offence smoking with six cuts across the back side. Now, when they were caught, second offence, smoking or smuggling cigarettes, that sort of thing, the whole of the lower deck was cleared, so there was 2,000 boys sort of cleared. The doctor would examine the culprit. He had his duck suit trousers on, so when he bent down, they were actually dead tight on his backside. He was strapped over a vaulting horse. The master of arms, you know, seemed a giant to me at the time, had this big cane, and he'd get six cuts across the backside. And it's an amazing thing. Boys would go back for Jangas different time because they were boys and they got into mischief and that sort of thing. Very few ever went back for a second lot of six cuts. It worked. And they didn't smoke. It worked.
Were there any other punishments?
No, I mean, punishments by your own instructors. I mean, for instance, there was a infamous place called Laundry Hill, because Shotley sits on the River Stour, and the River Orwell come down, and Shotley's right in the sort of point there. So obviously it slopes down to the river, you know, it's being high, it slopes down. And where the laundry was, because you all did your own laundry, and there was no detergents then, there was a hard soap, and you stripped off naked, and you went in there, and you had, there was big bowls, and it was all done by knuckles and hard soap, and put it on the deck, you know, because the deck was just stones, and it was all clean water, and you're rubbing away there, and you had to take each article up. The instructor sat at the end, and you had to take each article up as you washed it, and hold it up to him and turn it around, and if he didn't think it was clean enough, he'd send you back again. And he usually had a little, what they called a stonicky, I don't know how they spelled it, stonicky, a little rubber stonicky, and you were bare, he'd just give you a little whap across the backside, and go back and do it again, like I say. So you did all your laundry, but now the Laundry Hill, if the class was being a bit frivolous and mischievous or that sort of thing, the instructor would stop the instructions. Mainly this was when you were on the playground, because all the time you were doing rifle drill and plane drill and that sort of thing. You only did the basic drill, initial drill in the annex to start with, but you had to do rifle drill and the proper training, that sort of thing. And it was down Laundry Hill with a rifle above your head, and it was doubling up and down it, and they seemed to have the knack of knowing just when your legs was getting used to doubling up and down. Then they say full knees bend, and then you go up what they call the duck waddle. You had to waddle up this hill and four knees bend with a rifle above you, and you'd go up and down there, and as your legs seem to be getting used to being in that position, they'd say, you know, stand up, and you'd do that for half an hour. Perhaps that was a sort of, that wasn't an official punishment, it was just a sort of shake you up, being mischievous.
And that sounds murder.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough, there was no doubt about it, it was a tough place.
Now, what about the other lads, or looking at the different people, what were the recruits like? Were they from the same sort of background as yourself, from the same area? Were they from London? What were the origins of the people?
They're from all over. I mean, the Irish. I mean, people from Northern Ireland. And I had a mate who was a signalman, and his nickname was Doc, because I think at school he was known as Dr. Mouse. Now, he came from Cricklewood, Doc Saxby. He came from Cricklewood and belonged to a gang, and he was a really tough merchant. They used to stand one another against a tree and throw knives around them. Sometimes they used to miss and that sort of thing. And yet, inside he had a heart of gold. But outwardly he was a real hard case, but inside he had a heart of gold. You had people who come from, as I say, some of us left school at 14, others left school at 16. Most of them from working class families, but they were quite a mixture.
And how did you all get on together? I mean, was there any was it a good relationship, or were there fighting and bullying?
You often had scraps. I remember I had a punch up with a bloke called Benfield.
What was that about? What caused it?
Well, I'll tell you what caused that. You used to have Sunday divisions when you had to be sort of in the four number ones. Well, you used to wash your collars. And what we used to do is you only use the iron for Sunday divisions. The rest of the time, what you did was sort of dried your clothes and sort of even about when they were wet with your hands and dry them. And your collars you had to be folded in a certain way, the blue collars, and you used to lay them on the pipes in the cloakroom. To dry, so they dry with the crease, but you can iron them on Sunday, Ironman for Sunday divisions, and we were queuing up for the iron, and Jack Benford, he came from Liverpool, and he was very, very handy with his fists, and he tried to jump the queue, and I was the only one that stood up to him, and we ended up going into fisticuffs. And the funny thing was, a lesson of fighting doesn't win anything. I got thoroughly beaten up by him, and while we were fighting, everybody in the mess ironed their collars. So none of us got to the how stupid it was. Like, so, Jack Benfield and I became absolute bosom pals after that. It's amazing. And he died quite young. He died just after he retired, in his 40s, so I heard. But he was a real spouse, come from a tough area. But we used to, as you do sometimes, meet in your travels around the world, isn't it? But Jack and I, sort of ended up being quite pally.
And was there any actual bullying? I mean, I doubt if anyone bullied you, from the sound of things, but I mean, was there any bullying?
No, I don't think so. Not as such, because they used to gang up to gather against a bully. If someone was being unreasonable, you get the majority of the class would sort of put them in the line. There was a bit of rivalry between different messes, and sometimes used to raid another mess and knock all their tins off the shelves and that, when they were getting ready for rounds or something like that. And then you'd have to stay in guard waiting for their retaliation. There was all this going on. And the actual fact, in the washroom at the end of your mess, it was like big slate slabs, and you had enamel bowls on. There was, and there were taps. And we had one chap who was a bit scruffy and wasn't having the baths he should be having and the showers he should be having at the regular time. And the instructors, they were very clever. He just come in, and I always remember the instructor coming in the room and saying, the usual routine in the Navy is when someone is a bit dirty and scruffy, he said, they all get together, he said, and give him a good cleaning. He said, there's a bucket of water, a bar of soap and a scrubber on the shelf, I'm just going back to the mess for half hour. And all the boys grabbed this chap, stripped him off, laid him on this slab, and with hard scrubbers and a hard soap, scrubbed him from top to bottom. He wasn't dirty again.
Were you taught about the importance of personal cleanliness? I mean, because it is part of the name. I mean, tell me about it.
Oh, I mean, they were very, very strict on cleanliness. I mean, that was when you had you went down in your mess. You just had the washing facilities. You went down to communal showers. And you were taken down to communal showers in the morning, and you had two instructors would sit there. Because you had one instructor was the wireless instructor and the other one was the signals instructor, because the class was mixed. And they sit at the end there, and you all go and have your shower, and you had to come back and you'd hold your towel between your hands above your head like that, stand in front of him. And they say, turn around to the back to have a look and to see if you were properly clean. And the old stomach would come out again. Anyway, a quick little wrap across the back sides of all that. But you're inspected all the time, and watched.
Now, tell me, how did you get on with the instructors, and what did you think of them? How did they treat you, and how did you respond?
Oh, I mean, our instructors, I mean, they were like father figures to us, really. They really, they had a tough job. I mean, they were on the go. When you saw later some of the easier jobs one could have got in the Navy, they had a tough job there, because they were on the go from morning till night. And they were father figures, and, they used to talk to you, as a father, and you could go to them with problems and that sort of thing, and I thought they were very good. Bill Parkin, who was, because when I first went to Ganji, I had rheumatic fever. Now there's a lot of rheumatic fever went around Ganji, and I think I don't know whether the Czech, they take some blood out of your thumb or finger and put it in a glass tube, thin glass tube. They stand it there and they got a little like typical old alarm clock, and they turn it round, and they stand it there for a certain period until the blood settles, and you get the red corpuscles go to the bottom and the white at the top. And I think the normal healthy person has got about 12 millimetres of white. Most of the people had rheumatic fever, they had 24 millimetres. and they used to send them to the Royal Naval Hospital at Chatham for treatment. I had 123 millimetres of white. There was virtually little red in mine. And we had a surgeon captain there in our, because they had a very nice hospital at Ganges. They had a surgeon captain there who was a Scotsman, can't remember his name, and he refused to allow me to be moved. And he had, and when he went to Chatham, and the chaps who did it told me they used to give him injections under their kneecaps and things like that, you know, because of this rheumatic fever.
Now, what were the symptoms other than that your blood was dodgy? I mean, how did you feel when you got?
Well, it so happened that I went into hospital. Can't think what it was for now. I think I was just feeling poorly. The instructor sent me down to the hospital, and I said it's a beautiful hospital. And I woke up one morning and I couldn't straighten my legs, and you know, I was in a position, and the sick berth Tiffy, as we called him, sick berth Tiffy, he, you know, looking back, he had a knowing look, and he just got my legs and he straightened them out because he knew I was going to be like that for a long time. And the biggest worry is, you know, your heart's affected. You get a medicine. I wasn't, I mean, it wasn't a bad tasting medicine, but when you'd had it three times a day, day in and day out, it you just feel quite sickly. But this surgeon captain had his own theory on curing, and I was fed loads and loads of oranges. He reckoned the acid in the oranges sort of did something. And as I say, I was one of the worst cases they ever had, and I was one of the quickest to recover. But I always remember I had to be taught to walk again. I couldn't walk. And I always remember this nursing sister there. To start with, to strengthen my legs, once I got up, I used to sit on the table in the middle of the ward, and they used to put sacks with sand in on my legs, on my feet. And I used to have to put my legs up and down, strengthen the muscles in my legs. And then I remember walking up and down the wall with the sister, making me sort of go toe, heel. I had to learn to walk again. Unfortunately, I mean, I never had any effect since. You know, but it was something that happened.
Now, you got on really well with the instructors. What about the officers? Did you see much of the officers?
Oh, yes. I mean, you had a divisional officer. I mean, he was responsible. You know, each division, I mean, there was Blake. You know, they're all named after admirals. And because when you went on parade, all the classes in the division were on parade, and so he used to inspect. So, you know, you had a division officer, and they were responsible for your welfare as well, and, you know, keep a check on you, and then, you know. But, you know, the instructors were the closest thing. You
so the officers were more aloof, not aloof, but they were away, further away from you.
More away, but you know, they were watching everything that was going on, and, you know, that sort of thing, yeah.
Now, were you taught about naval, I forgot to mention, ask earlier, were you taught about naval history at all in your lessons? I mean, because you'd been very keen on joining the Navy, hadn't you? Did you do anything about the traditions of the Navy and naval history?
I don't recall doing actual naval history as such. And most of the education classes might like geography, maths, English, because English is important as a communicator. Obviously that was one of the prime subjects when you were a communicator. But I don't think I think something you learn from other sailors. More experienced people than yourself as time goes on. You know, you don't learn pure naval history. I think you learn more. The Navy is always referred to as the Andrew, and you found out from other chaps that was from a Lieutenant Andrews or something who was the best press gang officer the Navy had. He got more blokes into the Navy in Nelson's day than anybody else. So it was always referred to as the Andrew. That was a nickname for the Navy. It was always known as the Andrew.
So were you in? So did you get to know all the naval traditions through other people then, rather than from?
I think so. To start with, yeah, I think so. You sort of, and obviously you take an interest and you read books, don't you, and that sort of thing. And because even when you go to a ship, not destroyers and below, but on cruisers, battleships, aircraft carriers. You've got schoolmasters on there, and you can go voluntary to lessons.
I'll come back to that. Yeah. So now, anything happened? I mean, while you were there, I mean, one thing that happened was the declaration of war. I mean, I don't know how far through your course you'd got by then. It was September 3rd. Do you remember the outbreak of war and what effect it had on the classes?
When it was obviously imminent, one of the activities which we were engaged in was filling sandbags.
Because, tell us about that. What?
Because in the what they did in the playing fields, they had tunnels, you know, they had underground shelters built, like sort of, and there were sort of sandbags around the entrance, and we were engaged in sandbags. I remember one of the boys, oh, this is an interesting fact. Yeah, one of the boys, a pile of sandbags fell and broke his leg in a number of places. And at that time, I had gone in the hospital, and he was in the bed next to me. And they couldn't just put a splint on because the leg was broken in so many places. So what they had to do was to drill a hole through his heel and put a rod through there, you know, and add his foot up against it so it was stretched with the weight. And I'm lying in the bed alongside him, watching him drilling a hole through his heel and seeing all the flesh and bone coming out like you do on normal drill nights. I remember seeing that. But
so you weren't actually involved in the filling. You were in hospital at the time.
Well, I did some filling, but I mean, then I went into hospital. So, but the, and then the fact was that, I mean, that basic training was about 18 months at telegraphist, at the boys' traineeship. But because the war had started,
now tell me about, before we go, tell me about. Do you remember the day war broke out? Did you hear the broadcast? Were you aware of it at all? What did you think?
I was on leave. My father had set up this radio and electrical business, and I think I got something wrong there, because I didn't have the rheumatic fever till in the June.
It's a bit confused.
Yeah, I'm a bit confused on it. It might come back to me, because I was if I was on leave, war broke out in 39, didn't it?
3rd of September.
Oh, that's all right. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, because that was beforehand.
So did you hear the broadcast?
Yeah, I was on summer leave, and it was a Sunday morning, and so my father had this radio and electrical business. And I was just stepping out the front door because I was in uniform, because I had no civvies, because I mean, in those days, you know, once you got in the Navy, you grew, and I mean, you're outgrowing your clothes, and you couldn't afford to buy civvies as well as having a uniform. I was in uniform, I had my swimming costume and my towel rolled up, and I was just coming out the radio shop, and I heard the radio in our place announce that war had been declared, you know, the normal thing. And I shout out to my mum, I'm off now. And I went to the open air swimming pool at Winchmore Hill because I was going swimming with my mates. So that's actually what happened. I went swimming, and just after I walked down the road, the first siren went. And quite funny, chap on a bike with his steel helmet on and the big notice around his neck saying, "Take cover, air raid warning," or something, riding his bike around the streets. That's quite funny, that. Yeah, that.
Did you do anything, or did you ignore it?
Just ignored it. Just carried on swimming. Went up to met my mates, and we went to the swimming baths. Because being boys, I mean, we didn't have to go back. We completed our leave. I mean, different if we'd have been on active service and that sort of thing. But we finished our leave.